Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. We're presented by PPV.com. We're coming to you on the heels of another knockout from Gervonta Tank Davis, this time in the eighth round over Frank Martin. David Benavidez was in action. Liam Parro with an upset over Subriel Matias. It was a busy Saturday night in the boxing world, so you know we're going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it with my guy, the former world champion, the always world champion, the recently retired and now on vacation, a much deserved vacation, but he's still here with us because that guy just can't stop talking about boxing. It's Chris Algieri. As always, Chris, how are you, my friend?
Like I always say, man, the work never stops. Boxing never sleeps, and neither do we. We are Inside Boxing Live coming to you guys. We have big fights last night, and so it doesn't matter where I'm at in the world. We still got to work.
Do we want to say where you are? Where in the world is Chris Algieri? You were just outside on the deck, but the connection wasn't great. You got the shades on. It's not Florida. It's not South Florida. We'll just say that.
Mm-mm. No. I took a very long 8.5 hour flight. So I'll leave little crumbs for you guys to try and figure out where I'm at.
An eight count. Mm-hmm. Speaking of flights,
I got these little mini beers too.
Oh, beautiful. Mm.
Yeah, how'd that go, Dan? Because I'm a red eye connoisseur.
It was interesting. It was definitely an experience, something that I think everyone should try. I don't know if you should do it over and over. Now I know that I can do it. If you have nothing to do the next day, it's great because I slept all day and then I got up for the fights. If you have something to do the next day, that's a rough next day for you. I think I landed at 6 a.m. New York time. I took off at 9:55 Vegas. Yep. It's just like a time warp. It's mostly like a mental thing. And I wanted to test my brain because as I learned from you, Chris, it's all mental. It's everything is your diet is mental. Your workout is mental. Becoming a champion is mental. A red eye after three or four days of making content in Vegas, mental.
Mental. Very mental. Dude, champion lifestyle, baby. All starts up here. I'm glad that you're taking a little page out of my book there, taking a little red eye. Now you're becoming a real Vegas pro, someone who comes in and out of Vegas, leaving, and the first flight, because nothing good happens after 10 p.m. on a weekend in Las Vegas. So now you're getting a little wiser.
Yeah, I kind of wish I was there in the arena for that knockout, but I had some family things, and I did enjoy sleeping, being in my own bed Saturday morning, and then being in the PPV live chat all Saturday night with Jim Lampley and Lance Pogmire. Shout out to everyone that was in that chat. That was the most lit the chat has ever been was for the tank fight. It was so many people in there. PPV.com sent us out to Vegas last week. Got a lot of content with Tank. The numbers are crazy because he gets another spectacular knockout, so people are searching his name. So shout out to PPV.com. Order all your fights through them. It's going to be a great summer of big-time fights. No subscriptions. You can stream it to your phone, tablet. I know a lot of people are watching on their phone out. It's a summer night. You can watch it on your iPhone. You watch it, big screen TV, have a big party. So PPV.com.
I was watching it on an international flight last night on PPV. I was watching it on an international flight. Wow. I mean, you can't. Oh, wow. They said no streaming allowed. They were like, no, streaming won't work. No apps will work. PPV.com worked. I was watching live boxing on an international flight.
If that's not a ringing endorsement, then I don't know what is. Let's get right into it. Tank Davis knocks out Frank Martin in the eighth round. A carbon copy of some of his previous fights, another spectacular highlight reel knockout. I thought he was down on the cards simply because he was not letting his hands go. He told me earlier in the week that he was going to try to work on his punch volume. I think he was a little rusty, out of the ring for 14 months. I thought he was down on the cards, but not by a lot. I think all three judges had him up, 67, 66. Eighth round comes around. Frank Martin's fighting a very smart fight, but I think he was very stiff in there, Chris. I thought he was thinking about his every move. Yeah, Tank wasn't letting his hands go the entire fight, but he was making Frank think in there, and that right there can wear down a fighter from everything I've heard from you and others. But Tank gets the spectacular knockout. He finds him up against the ropes in the eighth round, unleashes that left hand, and hits him up as he's going down. Frank is flattened, a backflip. And now, once again, everyone in the sports world is talking about Gervonta Davis and how he is the top attraction in boxing, because you just never know when it's going to come, but you know that it's coming. And that right there is excitement.
Well, carbon copy, except for the fact that he got hit a lot. Frank was landing that left hand over and over again. I've never seen his cheek that swollen and red the way it was. I never seen him get hit so clean, which punches he did not see. Frank had a great game plan. He was countering really well, really sharp counters from the onset. I thought he had a great game plan. I thought he boxed really well. But it's just, man, it's the pressure. Tank puts so much mental pressure on you. He uses physical pressure as well. So even when he's not throwing, he's in front of you. He's moving his head. He's closing the distance. He's making the ring very, very small. Then he has game-changing power. Even when those punches are missing you, I've been in the ring with guys who can really punch. Those punches whiz by you, and you're like, I don't want to get hit with that. And when you're in there with Tank, that's exactly how you're feeling. I saw someone say that Frank was too busy trying not to get knocked out to try and win the fight. And that's what happens when you have a guy like Tank in front of you who's whizzing dangerous punches from every angle, any chance he gets. And Tank also has a good chin. He doesn't mind walking through shots. He doesn't mind getting hit sometimes. And he will trade punch for punch because he has always been and always probably will be the bigger puncher at these weight classes. So for him, very, very dangerous guy. Makes you very, very uncomfortable. Makes the ring very, very small. And like you said, Dan, it's just a matter of time. He's closing the distance. He's throwing those nasty punches. He's setting traps. He's analyzing data. I thought that was a spectacular performance from Gervonta Davis in the corner, you know, because he was getting clipped, and I had him down too, and then he was coming back those last couple rounds before he stopped him. Very, very close, I believe, on the scorecard. I wasn't scoring it as I went. I probably had Tank maybe up a little bit. Frank could have been there, could have been even, but the momentum was certainly in Tank's favor. But man, once he was in the corner and he kept saying, he was like, there's nothing on those shots. He said it over and over again. He's like, he's got nothing. He's got nothing. There's nothing on those shots. That's why he was just walking him down. The pressure became too much. You saw Frank's visage change. He looked less and less comfortable as the fight went on.
Yeah, he was touched a lot. I think Frank Martin landed one of the highest percentages ever on Tank Davis. So the bruising of the eye. You heard him in the corner saying that he's got nothing on the shots. Everyone in the chat on PPV.com and everyone on Twitter was all saying the same things. Yeah, I got Tank down, but it's only a matter of time before he knocks him out. Like, there's not many fighters that you can say that. There's not that many fighters out there that you can describe a fighter like that. That's what makes him so special, and that's what makes him, like, you're sitting on the edge of your seat. I like to say he's walking that tightrope before he detonates that bomb.
He never panics either. Never panics.
He never panics. He just was applies so much pressure. And yeah, Frank was he was landing some very nice shots, Frank. I got to give him credit before he got flattened. He had a very good game plan. He was moving backwards. He was getting in and out like a ghost. He would land two shots and then he would dip out of there, something that we thought he would do. I didn't think he'd be able to execute it as well as he did. Mix in the fact that Gervonta Davis hasn't fought in 14 months. He told us afterwards in the post-fight presser that he was a little bit rusty. But he's still damn good, and he still has one of the best left hands or any hand in all of boxing. Just so impressive. And I go on Twitter afterwards, and I look around, and I see all walks of life talking about Tank Davis, all athletes, NBA players, celebrities saying this guy is special. Tank Davis is the number one attraction of boxing because of the knockout power. You got to be able to have that in your hands. Like Mike Tyson was able to captivate everyone and the imaginations of fight fans and sports fans out there because you knew that you were going to see some highlight reel shit. Add this knockout to the highlight reel because Frank was absolutely flattened inside of that ring. It was one of those knockouts once again. Tank is back. It's great for boxing. I was with him all week, Chris, and I think he is coming into his own now. He better because he's 30 years old and he has a checkered resume. I think he's coming into his own right now. I think he's going to be – I think they're going to push the hell out of this guy. They're going to get him in there with Lomachenko. I think Lomachenko will be next. And it's just now we're going to really get the Tank Davis that everyone has wanted to see for a while. Big fights. I think Shakur, bring him on as well. Just bring on the big fights, because this didn't exactly feel like a big fight out in Vegas. I'm not going to lie. It didn't feel like a normal Tank Davis fight, because I think he needs a worthy partner now. I think, you know, the Ryan Garcia brought it out of him. I think he needs, like, the Lomachenko. I think he needs the Gervonta Davis. If he wants to go to 140, which I don't recommend, there's names for him there. Just out of nowhere. That's just Tank Davis. He's all of a sudden, the fight's, I wouldn't say boring, but you're just like, all right, when's it going to come? Boom, it comes, and then now we're all singing his praises. That's just Tank Davis in a nutshell.
No, I agree. I think he's primed to be, you know, to potentially step in as the face of the sport. He's like you said, he's 30. He's at that age. He's in his physical prime. And they've been kind of slow playing him for a while, and now it's time to step up and fight those big fights. You need, listen, great fighters need great dance partners, and he has guys all around him. He just needs to make those fights happen. The Lomachenko fight, I think is the logical next step for him, and will get him a lot of name recognition to have a guy like him on his resume. And I think at this stage, I mean, I would favor Gervonta in that fight. I think I would favor him over the last couple of years against Loma. You know, an aging Loma, still very capable Loma. But Gervonta, I think it's just on a different level at this point. But that's the kind of name that he needs on his record and to keep progressing at these big fights if he's going to be the face of the sport. And it just seems like it's a maturity process took a while for him, because now he is mature with the media. He's mature with how he handles interviews. You've been dealing with him all week. You know, your interactions with him are fantastic. Way better, way different than he used to be. And his fighting style has matured. Less and less we see him get flustered. You know, he's fighting better and better guys and doing the exact same thing. He developed his style over the years against the opposition they had in front of him. Now he's got the world-class guys in front of him and still doing it. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's awesome. You're right. Maturing is definitely like something I would say about Tank. Lomachenko did come up earlier in the week as a classic Bob Arum tactic. He brought up one of his best guys during a fight week for a whole different fight. Is it 5 years too late? Loma versus Tank. Yes. Do I still want to watch it? Yes. Do I think Loma has a lot left in the tank? Yes. Do I think it's one of the best opponents that Tank will ever be in the ring with or has been in the ring with? Absolutely. So bring that fight on. It's a unification fight. I'm sure Loma wants it. If anyone deserves some paychecks on the way out, it's Vasily Lomachenko. He can get up for that type of fight. I know the last time we saw him, he wasn't too keen on fighting on. He had that moment with his dad where, you know, it was translated into, like, do I even need to keep on fighting? I think they could talk him into fighting Tank Davis. I think that's a big fight. I think it would probably be the highest payday for Lomachenko. I don't know if it's a winnable fight. That's what I want to ask you, Chris. Like, who at 135 can give Tank issues? What type of style can beat Tank Davis? Because I don't see one out there that can.
Shakur. Only guy who I think stands a chance to be able to defuse the bomb that is Tank Davis. And even that's a big ask. I've always thought Shakur beats everybody. I still lean towards Shakur, but I don't know. This new version of Tank, I think at this level, he's got way more experience than Shakur does now at this point against top-level opposition, and he's able to execute. And I know a guy like Shakur who has sublime talent. If you're not tested at the highest level, we'll never know. We, you know, you have to be in front of these people and still be able to execute. And I haven't seen that from Shakur yet, just probably because of, you know, he hasn't been in the room with these guys yet. But doing it in front of a guy like Tank, that we see how dangerous he is, it's a whole different thing. Whereas Tank's doing it. You know, Frank Martin was arguably the toughest fight of his career, and he did exactly what he did to everybody else, even the smaller guys. There's a big knock on Tank that there's holes in his resume. Well, Frank Martin is very good, and he fought a very good fight, and it still ended the same way. So, yeah, a guy like Tank right now, who is surging in terms of his maturation process, in terms of his resume, in terms of who he's fighting and what he's doing, it's hard not to put the momentum behind him against anybody at 135, possibly Shakur included.
Just to go back to the resume, I don't want to spend too much time on that because, like, you could do a whole podcast on Tank's resume. And it's been discussed ad nauseum, but it's not really that bad. Pedraza in his prime beat a Pedraza.
Yeah, big win.
Leo Santa Cruz, yeah, blown up featherweight, but he disposed of him and he's still a name. Mario Barrios. Like, this guy went up to 140 and is not big. Like, he is 5'5.5". Yes. he is tiny, and he went up and beat a legit 147-pounder and dropped him multiple times. Throw in some of the other names. Pitbull Cruz, Hector Luis Garcia.
Which is looking now, really good in hindsight. That Pitbull Cruz fight's looking really good in hindsight.
With one hand. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on the resume. And it goes to what you just said, Chris. I have to see it in the ring. Like, you could say Shakur all day long. But, okay, Shakur has not fought that same level of competition. Shakur has not been under the bright lights. Shakur has not been a pay-per-view main event, a pay-per-view headliner, the reason why everyone's flying into town to watch you. That's a big thing. But in terms of what you're talking about style, I do think Shakur poses the best threat to beat Tank, and it's because of his fluidity in there. Martin was very elusive, but he was very tense, and he was thinking about his next move. He was thinking about his what am I going to do next? Where I think Shakur is such a savant, and I think Shakur is so fluid in there defensively. But the only thing is,
it's not so much
Shakur has enough power.
It's not the fluidity, because Frank's actually pretty fluid. It's distance control. Frank was unable to keep the distance. He was unable to control the space in the ring. He's not a ring general, or he couldn't be in that situation with Tank. And listen, I'm not saying Shakur can be either. You know, Tank puts on a tremendous amount of pressure. He is very calm in the way that he approaches and makes the ring small. Tank is such a good name. He strolls up to you. He has those wheels, grinds, and gets to you, and then unloads heavy artillery. Tank is a perfect name for him. But Shakur is possibly the best distance control fighter in the world. I think him and Bivol are probably the two best I've seen in current crop of fighters. Their ability to control distance, their ability to maintain range, their ability to change it in such a smooth manner. That's the biggest thing with Tank. You have to be able to control him walking in the front door. Because if you allow him to walk in the front door, you got Frank Martin. Frank Martin had a great game plan. Frank Martin's generally a pretty smooth guy. He's actually a pretty good ring general. He had nothing for Tank as that fight wore on. He could not deal with the pressure. He could not keep him walking in the front door. And if that's the thing, if you're going to beat Tank, you're going to have to be able to control his entry. If you can control his entry, he can't deliver that artillery, and you can win. Otherwise, you're getting knocked out. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah. Don't think it'll be a good fight. Don't think it'll be a crowd-pleasing fight, Shakur.
Not a lot of punches thrown.
Tank Davis. Yeah, you don't see everyone saying, man, the reason I watch boxing is for distance control. Man, I love me some distance control. I understand it wins you fights.
Love a good ring general.
Ring general. I grew up watching ring generals. My dad got me into this sport with the ring generals of the world. But that's how Shakur will win. And it doesn't really matter. Just get that W. It won't be a very pleasing style, because I'm thinking of, like, all right, is anyone in there with power that is just gonna, a brute that's just gonna just walk through some of Tank shots? No. And have ourselves like a barn burner. I don't think that's the best way to go about beating him. The best way to go about beating him is what you just described, and what Shakur Stevenson has inside of him, and what he has in terms of his skills. Will we see it one day? I think so, because we're just running out of dance partners for Gervonta. And Shakur is a free agent, and he's talking about it. He's getting up there in age. Gervonta Davis is turning 30, which is absolutely nuts to think about. So I think, you know, something you've been saying for a while now. It's just like, all right, get him to age 30, and now go. And this is kind of what Floyd Mayweather did. He had better resume than Tank in his 20s. But once he got to age 30 is when he was fighting the De La Hoyas, when he was fighting Canelo, when he was fighting massive, massive fights. Hopefully there's some out there, because I want to see Tank on the highest level. I think he is the bona fide star of this sport, in the U.S. At least, because of his ability to put his opponents on their ass and his ability to create highlight reel knockouts. We're living in a highlight reel world. We're living in a Instagram, TikTok. I am a part of it, putting out clips nonstop on our social media, and Tank Davis fits that. His walkouts are must watch. His celebration, the backflip he did at the weigh-in, I was literally like, oh wow, that was freaking sick. And then he does the backflip.
Even more impressive than that was the ice cream the night before. That impressed me more than the backflip. Okay. Backflip at a weigh-in is impressive, so having an ice cream the night before at CVS when talking to Dan Canobio, and he's making predictions that he lives up to, eighth round, calling the round the night before while eating an ice cream in CVS, that's more impressive to me All then right. a backflip at the weigh-in, and a matching backflip on fight night.
Let's get to it. 20 minutes in. I'm not going to tap myself on the shoulder here because I wanted to lead the show with this. But I'm going to wait because this is about Tank Davis, not about me. We're walking back from dinner. Me, Mitch, and Meg from PPV.com had a beautiful dinner. Beauty in Essex. Shout out Chris Santos, huge boxing fan, hooked us up. So we're walking back. Hey, guys, let's head into CVS. I want to get a water that doesn't cost $9 inside the MGM. So we go to CVS.
Oh, another pro Vegas move there, Dan. Another pro Vegas move.
So I'm on the line, and Mitch is like, bro, Tank is here. I'm like, no, he's not. It's CVS, and it's like 11:30 at night. He's like, yo, Tank is here. He's in the ice cream aisle. So I go, I check out, and I see him there. He's with one other guy, and he's eating a SpongeBob ice cream pop. But the best part about it is he has the box of like a six-pack. He has the box in his hand. So he's eating one of them in there, and he has like five others in the box. And I'm like, yo, Tank, what's up, bro? Like, I showed him the video that we did. I'm like, our video's blowing up. And he's like, oh, shit, yeah, I didn't recognize you. What's going on? And we're chatting it up, whatever. And I'm like, wow, you're really out here just hanging out. He's like, yeah, I just want to walk around a little bit. And he goes, I asked him, what round? What round do you think you're going to stop? I was like, it's between us, bro. It's just between us. He goes, eighth round. I was like, all right, I'm going to bet that. I was like, you ever bet on yourself? He's like, no. And I'm telling him the story how Keith Thurman did. And then we just went our separate ways. Like, I didn't take a picture with him. I didn't, like, do anything. I just wanted to leave him alone because he looked like he was just getting out of the hotel and just having a good time. So I go and bet it. And what does he do? He knocks him out in the eighth round. Unbelievable. It's all over.
Apparently,
Twitter.
Apparently, he told other people nine because the telecast was saying that he predicted nine. But I was like, oh, no. He told my guy Dan eight.
He told eight. He told eight, and Ryan Garcia predicted eight. A lot of other guys were predicting eight. It was just a cool. That's just a cool.
Eight was a good bet. I didn't want to take it because you took it. I was like, I got to do something else. That's why I think I've said 10. But yeah, no, I mean, and it came out of nowhere. Like, yeah, he was putting pressure, but like the way that he just
seventh round
just ended it was incredible. He put an exclamation point on it. You know, we did our slip and rip video. That was the fight. That was what Tank was doing the second half of the fight. Just walking him down, slip and rip. Dripping it, walk him down, slip and rip.
Yeah. Seventh round, he had Frank. He was hitting him with some good shots up against the ropes. And I thought, all right, maybe he'll get that eighth. But, you know, smart betting Dan, as I also put some money on round seven through nine. So I won double. So I won last night. I probably won the most money I've ever won on a bet. So I did seven through nine Tank, and then did eighth round Tank.
$200.
I won way more than that. I know. Just a cool Vegas moment. Like when you're out there for a fight covering it, you don't know. You don't want to know who you're going to run into. You don't know what's going to happen. You run into the main event guy. He gives you a prediction. You go out there, you put it on out there into the ether, you put it on DraftKings, and then everyone calls you a genius. And meanwhile, I'm not a genius. I just literally listen to the guy, the most important person, Tank Davis, inside of the ring. Speaking of theatrics and all crazy shit in Vegas, did you catch Ryan Garcia and Caleb Plant got into a little bit of a brawl?
I did. I saw that apparently. I mean, I don't know what to believe, but Caleb threw beer on him, then he put some a few fingers at him as Ryan's entourage is getting peeled away. I don't know. I'm getting tired of the whole Ryan Garcia show. Like this whole every time there's something going on to pick a fight with anybody and everybody calling out Benavidez. It's just way too. What is that word? What is that guy who's just too into somebody or too into a girl? Not that he's simping,
thirsty?
But he's just like. He's a tryhard. It's begging for too much attention. It's
froze.
I don't know. It's got OnlyFans model girl vibes to it. Like I need attention. I need attention. I need attention. And it's annoying at this point. I'm over it.
Yeah, I think it was like Caleb Plant's pretty outspoken on Caleb Plant's been pretty outspoken on the drug use and. Mm-hmm. So then Ryan immediately goes to his wife. So let's bring up his wife, Jordan Plant.
He does that with everybody, though. Get over that. Like, that's so stupid. He does that with literally everybody. Oh, I banged your wife. Oh, you're bringing some DMs. Dude, we know you're lying. You say you've literally come back and say you lied every single time, but you still keep using that. Yeah. That is such an annoying and stupid, childish move that he pulls on every single person.
Right, and Caleb Plant should have smacked him in the face and threw a beer on. Couldn't get close enough, but Ryan Garcia is spiraling and bringing up wives. It's just too much. Moving on. David Benavidez, his debut at 175 pounds. I thought he looked sharp. He gassed out a tiny bit. But the thing with Benavidez, he gets the unanimous decision over Vodzik. I thought he looked fine. I thought he looked explosive for the first six rounds. Did he gas out in the middle rounds? Absolutely. He brought up a cut over his eye that he had in camp, and he also brought up a problem with his right wrist slash arm. Didn't want to pull out of the fight. He goes in there at 175. He gets a unanimous decision win. You could arguably say that he won 9 or 10 of the 12 rounds. The thing with Benavidez, when he's calling out Canelo as aggressively as he is, his margin for error with the fans is so slim that if he doesn't just look like a world beater in there, if he doesn't look like Muhammad Ali, if he doesn't look like Roy Jones in his absolute prime, then everyone's going to say he's overrated. Everyone's going to say this guy ain't the truth. This is no monster. I saw it on my own social media. That's just the way boxing fans are. There's really not a lot of nuance. I thought he looked fine for the first time at 175. He has to figure out his pace there at 175. I think he's going to be fine. Is he ready for Bivol and Beterbiev yet? No. Pump the brakes a little bit on that. Get a few more fights under your belt at 175. If you want to campaign there, fine performance. He gave himself a 7 out of 10. I thought it was a little bit better than that. Fine performance, but he's going to have people all over him because of his constant call-outs of Canelo.
I thought he looked great. He was explosive. He was dangerous. He was throwing combinations. He hurt Vodzik multiple times. Vodzik is humongous. And just absolutely tremendous for that weight class. Comes in absolutely phenomenal shape, even at 37 years old. Super talented guy, you know, Olympic medalist and, you know, former world champion. Gave Beterbiev all he could handle for a bunch of rounds before he succumbed, which I thought was going to happen this time. But like you said, it looked like that Benavidez gassed a little bit because I think he was just trying so hard to get the knockout. Like every punch in the first six rounds was just... they were all haymakers, just got in position and just ripping shots. Vodzik is tough, man. The body shots that he was taking all night long, very, very impressive. Benavidez never been a one-punch guy, and I think as we see him in these heavier weight classes with these bigger guys, we're not going to see the stoppages that we saw in the smaller weight classes. I want to put to bed the weight bully thing. He's certainly not a weight bully. He was outboxing, outworking, out-positioning. And his precision on his punches and his combinations were fantastic last night. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a great performance against a very good fighter. But you know, every chance that there is to knock Benavidez, there will be. He didn't stop Caleb Plant. Canelo did. There's a knock. He didn't stop Vozdik. Beterbiev did. There's a knock. Yeah, so there's always going to be a knock on him, like you said, because of the Canelo fan base is rabid, and you know he's been calling him out and trying to get that fight. But all in all, I thought it was a very good performance. I think 175 suits him just fine. But that was the first time I've ever seen someone bigger than him in the ring, and it didn't matter because this is boxing, and he went out there and used his boxing skills.
I thought Vozdik, Lampley said it's pronounced Vozdik. Lampley gave me a Vozdik stern talking to.
He's right. He was upset. He's absolutely with right. Some of the,
He was upset with how it was being pronounced all week. Classic Jim Lampley. Vozdik, I thought, was the perfect first opponent for Benavidez at this weight. A veteran, tough, big, strong, 37 years old, like I'm about to be in a couple of days, with a freaking just ripped and gave Benavidez tough rounds. But you're right. It's not just Canelo's fan base that's chirping at Benavidez. It's all of boxing, because if you're that outspoken and if you're going to challenge the face of boxing, if you're not a Canelo fan, you have respect for him. So there's some people out there that don't like the way that Benavidez has gone about trying to get this Canelo fight. So you better be perfect inside of there. You better knock out every guy in front of you. You better go up 7 pounds to a whole new weight class, fight a former champion who's on his last stand, who's huge, who can take a punch. Oh, you better get him out of there in 6 rounds. And I thought that David was well on his way to doing that. I've tweeted after the 5th or 6th round, like, holy crap. Like, this guy, he didn't lose any hand speed. He didn't lose any movement. I thought his defense was really, really good.
Really good. Really improved defense. I thought he was going to get Vozdick, out in 4 or 5. The way that he was putting damage on him so early. But great point about the defense and the head movement. Very impressive. Got hit way less.
Yeah. I mean, we've been saying that for a while. Like, this is not a podcast that's going to say that he's a weight bully. We've been talking about the intricacies of David Benavidez's game. Defense, he is very good defensively. And the reason why he doesn't get a lot of credit from the layman or the casual is because he doesn't exactly move his feet like a defensive fighter does. It's all upper body movement. It's head movement. He slips a lot of the punches. That punch is going to suit him well at 175 with some really big punches in there. Right away, he said Vozdick hit harder than anyone or one of the top guys I've been in the ring with. And Vozdick's not exactly known for power. So you have to make an adjustment. I mean, the guy's going up to 175 now. Well, could he go back down to 168? He says he could. I don't know, man. That's a big, big jump. That's 7 pounds at that weight. It's a big thing. I don't know what's left for him at 168 besides Canelo. I didn't like the fact that he went to 175 because I think it got left, allowed Canelo, let him off the hook a little bit. 175 is where he should be. That's where the better BFs are. Bivol, Morel is there now. Some guys that are at 168 can go up. Like, I don't see him going back down to 168 unless Canelo saw something last night and was like, all right, let me get him back down to 168, put a weight clause on him, hydration clause or whatever. I don't know, Chris, what do you think? I don't see him going back down to 168 ever again unless it's the Canelo fight.
I agree. If it's and I said that. Once he started talking about 175, I was like, all right, we're not seeing him at 168 ever again unless Canelo can lure him down with some kind of weight stipulation. So that's the only way we're going to see him back out at 68. I think it's the only way we're going to see him against Canelo also, because Canelo's not going to go up to 75 to fight him. So he's got to make him come down to 68. He's going to put some kind of rehydration clause on him. So that's the only way I see that fight happening, which still could. I'm still staying open-minded to it. I know everyone's saying he'll never fight him. If you saw him last night and said, well, hey, he doesn't have that one punch power and I'm going to make him suck back down to 68. Yeah, we might make this fight happen. But I agree with you, Dan. I don't think we're going to see him at 68.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple ways to look at it. Like you said, like if Canelo did see something there, like it's different. Yeah, Canelo could say, all right, let's do it now. 168. You just had this camp at 175.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
I wouldn't be that surprised either. And halfway through the fight, I was like, he's taking his foot off the gas. And it made me think, this is not what he did, but it made me think. Remember when Golovkin was like, I'm going to stand and get hit. Who did he fight before Canelo? And I'm going to look vulnerable and I'm going to get hit a bunch. Who the hell was it? Willie Monroe, maybe? And he let Willie Monroe like tee off on him a little bit. And like, the HBO broadcasters were like, oh, wow, Triple G is very vulnerable. He can be hit, so maybe Canelo will want to fight him. I'm not saying that's what Benavidez did, but it went into the back of my mind. Like, okay, why is he all of a sudden in the sixth, seventh round just, like, not throwing? He threw, like, 16 punches. Like, that's not David Benavidez. It was obviously injuries and then him at a higher weight and getting used to the pace at 175. He's doing this on the fly. I think it's cool that he's at 175. I think it's cool what he's doing. He says, can campaign at both weights. Easier said than done, but he's graded on a curve and he's graded a little unfairly in my opinion because of his boldness, his brash style of calling out Canelo Alvarez, but I thought he was fine. Like, I don't think he's ready for Better Be Ever Bivol though.
No, he might never be, and that's just because that's how good those guys are. And that's the thing about if he is moving up to 75, and 68 is dangerous too. You got, you mentioned those top guys. You got the Morels. I love the Munguia fight for him. I think it'll be a really fun fight and a fight that he would win. I think he beats everybody except for Morel and possibly Canelo. But at 75,
you think Morel beats Benavidez?
Very possible. Yes. I think David Morrell Jr. is phenomenal. And I think he's going to be a nightmare for literally all of those guys. I think it's going to take a guy like him to be able to compete with like a Bivol in terms of his ability, his punching power, his endurance, his ring control, his body. He's got a very, very freakishly long, like wide back, long arms, tall. Also with that quickness and athleticism, a very, very dangerous guy and often overlooked because he just doesn't have enough fights or experience or just world stage opportunities thus far. So Yeah, listen, Benavidez is in a tough place. Everyone who chases Canelo ends up being in a tough place if he doesn't want to fight you, because then you got to just fight everybody else. And there's a lot of really tough guys out there. Sometimes the biggest name in the sport isn't the most dangerous. That's a fact. You got guys like David Morrell lying in wait. You got guys like Dmitry Bivol. You know, obviously everyone is aware of Beterbiev because of the punching power. But Bivol, man, is a nightmare. That guy is so difficult to fight. He might beat everybody too. So it's a lot of really interesting fights, a lot of huge names. And I think him at 75, I think it's going to be fun because he's a fun fighter. And I think he needs a little more building and getting used to the weight class. I know he's a big guy coming down. He's not a true light heavyweight yet. He has to grow into the weight class.
Absolutely. He's only 26, 27 years old. Forget that. He's 27. You forget that because he's been on the stage for such a long time. 20 years old. He told me, did a little video with him. I was like, what's the first thing you bought? He goes, I was 20 years old. I bought a $42,000 Cuban link chain, like every other boxer out there. And then I realized that's a stupid investment. So I started buying houses. And he told me he bought out, like straight up bought three houses, one in Miami, one in, I forgot where, Vegas or something. But it was a cool video that that's out right now on our socials. Yeah, he's going to grow into that weight class. That's a fun weight class. The only thing is that Bivol is early 30s or 33, 34. I'm horrible with ages. Everyone knows that. I like to say two ages, so I'm not in trouble there. We know that Beterbiev is 40, so that's going to be tough. Unless Beterbiev beats Bivol right away, will he get Benavidez? And like you said, I don't think Benavidez is exactly ready for 175 just yet or ready for the big names, but he might not have any time. You know, the way that Turkey is operating, the way that boxing is going right now, is if you're a big name, you're going to find yourself in some big fights now because of the money that's being thrown around in Saudi and just the opportunities that are out there right now in the sport. So for Benavidez, it might be a big name at 175, like the top elite guys. We're talking about top 5 pound-for-pound guys in Bivol and Beterbiev, or it might be Canelo Alvarez. So be careful what you wish for, David Benavidez. You've been calling for big fights. Here they are. So you better be ready for them. Don't want to hear about injuries afterwards and all that. But will Canelo take on Benavidez after that performance is very, very interesting. I still lean Canelo at 168 because I think Canelo can outsmart him. I think he can on the big stage. He's been there a little bit more. Benavidez, not that one-punch guy, more of an accumulator. I do like what I'm seeing from Canelo as of late. I know that you can agree with me, Chris. Not as prolific a puncher as he is, but he's still dropping guys. He's dropping Munguia. He's dropping power Charlo. He's so precise. The power is still there. He's not like the Canelo we saw of 2019 when he was just knocking fools out left and right. He's still dropping guys, and he's so smart, and he's one of the smartest fighters out there. I'm not about to just say that Benavidez is going to steamroll Canelo Alvarez at all. So will we see it? Maybe I'm a little more optimistic, but 168 is going to be, that's going to be a problem now, but we might see it. We might see it with David Benavidez at 175. Other fights on the card, Chris, Alberto Puello upset Gary Russell Jr. Weird fight. Nothing really notable to me. Russell looks so rusty because he fights once a year, very inactive. Puello is also inactive, but he's just long. And he countered him. This, to me, the story of this fight was Antoine Russell Jr. getting bit in the ass by being so damn inactive. It's a guy that I thought was a dark horse at 140. Could still very well be. I mean, one loss shouldn't define you. But it's a setback for Gary Russell Jr. and for Puello, a guy that popped for PEDs 2 years ago. He's right back in the mix as an interim title and all that. Minor upset because I just thought Russell was just way too inactive, but an upset nonetheless.
I'm not going to speak too much on it, but I'm going to just disagree a little bit. I thought Puello fought fantastic. He fought a very, very good, smart fight.
He did, yeah. He fought great.
He used his experience. He used his trickiness, his slickness to give a young fighter who was a little wet behind the ears enough trouble that he was uncomfortable and wasn't in a good place to win that fight. So I'm going to tip my hat to Puello, who I never thought wasn't any good, but I didn't think he was that good. But I thought he boxed a very, very smart fight against a young, and I'll say it again, wet behind the ears, dark horse in the division. And he's really young. He can still learn. Great performance from Puello. I tip my hat.
Well, Gary Russell Jr. ain't that young, bro. He's 28. He's like a Bruce Carrington type.
But he's young because he doesn't have experience. The guys that he fought at Note were like 40. Like, he's only fought really old known guys. So
post-style.
Postol, Bartholomew, like those are old. Those guys are old.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But shout out to Puelo. He did fight great, and he used his length. He used his reach in there.
Salas, man, fought a
very
a great,
smart fight.
Great, every guy that works with Salas gets smarter. They box smarter. They just have a better game plan. They're mm-hmm. strategic. I really think Salas is a secret weapon that a lot of these guys are utilizing.
The first fight of the night was a putrid fight. Carlos Adames and cool. Tyrell Gauthier. Well, I just could not believe that Tyrell Gauthier got a pay-per-view fight. Seems like a great guy, but he is just a brutal, brutal watch. He does not go in there to win. He tries to freaking survive. Adames just didn't step on the gas pedal. Another guy that's been out of the ring for a while. That fight, there's nothing to even discuss. It was just that bad of a fight. Elijah Garcia lost on the free portion of the night.
Very similar to the Puelo. Like just an experienced guy, and you got someone who's just immature and wet behind the ears and didn't have the...
Missed weight all week.
The wherewithal to step up. It's a shame because I'm a big fan of Elijah Garcia so far and what he's been able to do. But yeah, that was a big impediment, losing to a guy like Chiron Davis. No knock on him. But a guy like a prospect like Elijah Garcia is supposed to get past Chiron Davis.
Right. Elijah Garcia, they were talking about him being like the future of 160 pounds. This is just once right now. This is middleweight is a cursed division because you have Adames finally elevated and he didn't look great. He's in a fight with Gauthier where he just did not look great. Janibek, no one wants to fight him. Actually, no, he has zero profile. Even like the guys like Elijah Garcia, who PBC is trying to build up, you know, he's coming in overweight. The fight got called off two or three times before this. He was 3 pounds over. He was over on Friday, and then he finally made the weight. Then he loses to a guy that he should have beaten. So that's 160 in a nutshell. Finally, Subriel Matias upset by Liam Paro. I'm going to be dead honest with you. I didn't watch a second of this fight. I was really locked into the PBC Amazon card. I woke up this morning and I'm doing this now. It's Father's Day. I got places to be. I will watch the fight, but I will tell you this, Chris, this is something we've both said and we've gotten ripped for it. Subriel Matias is not the boogeyman that you thought he was. Like, he is a ferocious puncher, tough as nails, but he lacks the fundamentals, I thought. And you put me onto this as well. And he ends up losing a pretty wide decision to Liam Paro. So Matias doesn't have a belt anymore in his homecoming fight in Puerto Rico. Will he get a rematch? Who knows? But, you know, I'm not that shocked by this.
Hey, Puerto Rican fans, where are you guys at? You guys have been attacking me for months because of the things I was saying about Subriel Matias. Holes in his defense, gets hit too much, can be outboxed. One-dimensional. Yeah, he's a tough guy. Yeah, he hits hard. Yeah, he comes forward. Gets hit too much. World-class fighters don't get hit. Gets hit too much. Me and you had an argument about this. You were like, oh, this guy's a guy. And I explained to you. I'm like, no, watch this. Look at this fight. Look at this fight. Look at this fight. Dude, the red flags were all over the place for Subriel Matias. I know everyone was singing his praises. I never did. I saw what I saw. I know what I know. And I've been watching this guy. And I'm like, it's just a matter of time. So one, he either gets completely outboxed like he did last night, or he runs into someone and that chin runs out and he gets iced. It was a matter of time. So all you guys, I want my Puerto Rican apologies coming in because I've been getting it from you guys and I've doubled, tripled down on it.
You're not gonna get those.
Calling me dumb, saying I was an idiot, and blah blah blah. And I always said it. I was like, I'm gonna triple down on it until I see this guy with a world class fighter actually beat somebody. He's fought nowhere near the elite level. I don't think Liam Powell's elite. He's a world class for sure, world champion now, but he's not an elite level fighter yet either. So that was the first time he fought a true world class fighter, and he got smoked. So there you go, guys.
Yeah, I couldn't said it better. Are you an idiot and are you dumb? We can still argue that, but you're smart.
Absolutely.
Today you're smart. Let's wrap up this show. You're on vacation. It is Father's Day. Quick shout out to all the dads out there. Obviously, we know that 96% of our listeners and watchers are men. A lot of you are dads. Some of you are dads and you don't even know it. But happy Father's Day to everyone out there that listens and watches Inside Boxing Live. Boxing is a sport that you're usually introduced to by a father figure or your dad or your grandfather. I certainly was introduced to it by my dad. Shout out Bob Canobio. He's the man. He got me into this sport. He is a legend, and he is a great dad. So shout out to all the dads out there. doing their thing. And shout out to the moms out there that serve as dads as well. I want to cover all my bases here, politically correct Dan.
Yeah, and the moms who are married to dads. so today is for everybody, man. It's for everybody.
And the kids. You can't be a dad without the kids. So happy Kids Day.
Happy Father's Day. Actually, speaking of which, I got to go FaceTime with my dad. Make sure I wish him all the best. Tell your dad I said nice. happy Father's Day, by the way, Dan. Send my best
all right.
to Bob.
I will. I will. Let's wrap this up, guys. We're going to be back next sometime later in the week. We're going to align with Chris. He's on a very much well-deserved vacation. Thank you for everyone that stuck with us. And it might be a little choppy. We're going to figure out everything. I thought it was pretty good in terms of technology. We'll get it all figured out. We'll be back next week with some more fallout from Gervonta, hopefully some more boxing news, some big fights next week as well. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have a CVS bet for me. See you, Chris.
Peace.
Feel the rush. Live thoroughbred racing is happening now at Laurel Park, the Players Track. Every Friday through Sunday, the gates open at 11 a.m. and the action starts at noon. Free admission, fast-paced racing, and real wagering excitement from start to finish. Pick your horses, place your bets, chase the win. From live racing and simulcast action to great food, special events, and nonstop sports viewing, Laurel Park is where the action lives. Come, win, play. Visit laurelpark.com.